Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is a two-part interview. Back again, my guest, Ellie Flippin. She's a niece of Ingo Swann, editor of Why Do We Feel There's More to Us Than We or Anyone Knows About, as well as the author of Conjunction World. This time we're talking about the five-book series, You Are More Than You Think, Book 1, What's Already There, Book 2, Where You Sit, Book 3, The Shape of Knowing, 4, Above the Noise, and 5, The Gravity of Reality. Basically, you're going to do this as a workbook series. Each one does stand alone, but the numbering maintains the progression for readers who move across the entire sequences, in her words. So it's really an excellent compilation from my own perspective. Book 3 and 4 are a little denser, so a lot more content to get through. Information dense, in other words. So you learn a lot and put it to practical use.
I wanted to find like very simple things that people could do to become more, not open, but more cognizant of things that are happening at a subconscious level that they could bring to the conscious level.
Ellie Flippin, Ingo Swann's niece.
I was floored when I actually had an event that I needed to then reference one of the books that you sent me. So I'm thankful. Ingo is, he's an inspiration to me, period. These books are part of for anyone who is interested in becoming more aware of their own intuition, aware of their own guidance, aware of how to connect with other realities and in a safe way. This is it. And it starts with book one, What's Already There. I love the ant on the front. So Ellie, congratulations on completing 5. All right. That, I mean, this is excellent, but it's great. It's great content.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you for having me today on your program to discuss this. Last time we spoke about my book, Conjunction.World, and I ended that by saying I was done tracing around the world to try to understand other realities. And instead, what I needed to do was work on my own perception. So this kind of inquiry into perception and awareness. And part of that was shaped by growing up around my uncle, Ingo Swann. The questions he was, I think, ultimately developing about contemporary exploration of awareness, self-embodiment, and meaning as ourselves on this planet as human beings. So I am so grateful to be able to share that with you today.
A lot of this is about learning that there are other ways of viewing these extra realities around us. So much of it depends on what we are either programmed by society or by our own communities, by our families, when we're little, to either acknowledge it or deny it and say, no, this isn't there, or it's bad. This goes beyond that to say, okay, what's there, and noticing and seeing, okay, what is it I'm actually seeing? And before I decide to decide what it is, just to sit with it. Book by book, you go through that. Now, the information dense ones are just, if you're planning ahead, 3 and 4, all right, that's where you actually do some work. You have to do the work there.
It was really, it's very so fascinating. When I started, it was just going to be one book. And as I got into it more and more and more, I said, oh, this can't be one book. It really has to be split up because, as you mentioned, 3, 4, and 5, right? Very dense in material. Mm-hmm. But I wanted the introduction to be like, it's something that easy to do, simply to notice, to be aware kind of thing. So when I looked at this series, like You Know More Than You Think, this 5-book series that is exploring human perception, human awareness, and something I call organismic, so like of the organ, of yourself, intelligence. So our body's innate capacities to sort of detect and organize and respond to just experiences before our conscious consciousness explains it. Ingo called that our intellect. Yeah. Like the intellect already jumps in and explains what it is. But this is before that takes over. And so when I broke up the book into 5 books, I saw it as sort of a progression. So book one is the noticing that you talked about, the noticing, right? Like before we think, before we decide, before we explain anything, there's already things happening around us and we're sensing that. So before we kind of put some sort of label on it, our body is sensing it. There's like a shift in an emotional tone. Our attention is being drawn somewhere. And so I wanted to explore how our perception operates and invite people to kind of reconnect with that capacity, like sensing atmospheres and patterns and cues. I sort of felt knowing, but to make sure not to frame it as a mystical or extraordinary experience.
Some of it has to do with the way we've brought it into context, like saying, well, that's just my mind running away with me. So it's a mental thing, mm-hmm. instead of acknowledging it, it's a sense that you're actually picking up on. So that's mm-hmm. what you go into detail on in the initial book of starting to say firsthand experience is really important, but it's different for each and every one. So you have to realize, mm-hmm. how can I make it visible? How can I make it relevant in some way to me? And not immediately assume somebody else's explanation or characterization of it applies. And that's where we fall into the trap. They've already explained it. It's already been done. Why go there?
Yes. And when I was developing this series, people were like, oh, it could be this great how-to book, or it could turn into this like training program. I was like, no, that's exactly the opposite of what I think needs to happen, because you're absorbing that secondhand experience versus your own experience. So you have your own frame of references, and you called it, you also said you have your own reality box, the way you were brought up, what you learned, your culture, things that are around you that may not be around other people, how you view things, societal cues, religious cues, spiritual cues are so unique to each and every individual. I wanted to find a way to be like, no, this is for you and only you to work through. Which is hard, because society now is like, especially with social media, you just want the easy answer, the thing you can do right away. And this is the challenge, is it's hard work.
Yeah.
So book one, I wanted to make easy, right? Like, go sit in the cafe and, you know, like, don't be intrusive, but look at somebody and see how long it takes for them to like turn around and look at you, because mm-hmm. it's almost immediate. I mean, that's a very natural thing that happens. We're very aware that there's some sort of attention on us, right? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to find like very simple things that people could do to become more, not open, but more cognizant of things that are happening at a subconscious level that they could bring to the conscious level.
One example is the touchless handshake. That's a good example.
Yeah. Did you try it?
No, I'm not.
No.
No, I already know what I'm inviting, and I'm not going there. Thank you.
What for you was most interesting in book one?
Okay, well, this gets the overview of what it's like to sense presence, to basically get mm-hmm. outside your body and get outside your mind and start becoming mm-hmm. more aware on a different level of like the room temperature. Someone mm-hmm. else who's aware of you, like you're talking about, but they are not happy that you are mm-hmm. sensing them. Okay. Other responses that technically are on the back burner because you're too busy thinking about the day's whatever you've got going on your program, but it's actually loosening you up to get out of that autopilot. So that's what I think. And for me, the first book represented was getting out of lockstep and starting to see what else is outside here. And then how I feel. The problem is that there's so much of this I've already been doing for decades. So this is, you know, I've already noticed these. It's subconscious, and I know when I'm in somebody else's space, I know when they're in mine, and I, you know, those kind of things. It's like you block it because it's too much information. For me, it's too much information. Mm-hmm. I don't need it. But when you're just learning, then you realize, oh, that isn't my thought, and that's not my problem. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. So when I thought about this, because I was around 357 when Ingo trained Bob Durant and Jim Schnabel, and Jim Schnabel was writing his book on the remote viewers in the mid-90s. You know, I think Bob Durant was even like, it was weeks before we even started even learning the remote viewing protocol. So I kind of understood this series to be that sort of, what was the groundwork Ingo would have done to prepare somebody to then start doing more advanced perceptual work? And that's really what I wanted the series to be. Like, before you go do heavy duty perceptual work, I think getting to know yourself and your own system is very important.
Yes.
And anybody can do that. Even if you don't go on to doing more heavy duty perceptual work, at least you have a solid foundation of yourself and being attentive to what's happening in the media, what's happening with people, what's happening with emotions, like how much emotion is really ours, or are we just absorbing it from the person around us? And then how not to do that. I don't need to carry your anger, or I don't need to carry your elation, or I don't need to carry your charismatic effects, right? Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, one thing that's real subtle is the social media, because you, the response, if you sit and watch anything, whether it's a program, whether it's news, whether it's somebody's, you know, little video, then where's my mind going while I'm doing this? And your body will shift and change. And then you realize maybe I don't need to engage with this because it isn't helping me. It's making me feel uncomfortable. I don't like it. Yeah. It's just stressing. Yeah. But sometimes we go through all those videos and that whole, everything without ever saying, I've had enough. It's not helping me. And that's what I think this tunes you into by being aware. I'm having a physical reaction to this. What do we do to say that's enough? Because as long as you're engaging all of that, you're disengaging from your own inner sense.
Yes. And I feel that modern society removes that.
Intentionally.
Intentionally. Yeah. And so this is a return, right, to what's already there, right? That's what I liked it, that return to what's already in you. It's just been so programmed out of us for a long time. We become like passive observers in our own body instead of active observers of what our body is telling us. And so the first step is just to be attentive to what's happening. And that's, I think, the basis of the exploration. So even though book one has a lot of introductory stuff, I felt it was important to lay a foundation because I can't just like jump into all of these explorations.
No.
But I had to lay a groundwork. But the books are very exploratory oriented for you. Yeah. And so then you go on to book two, right? Which is, again, it's called Where You Sit. Yeah. And I loved it because I found that this quote, this politician, like, you know, where you stand depends on where you sit, right? Or where you sit depends on where you stand. And that was sort of like, how do you remain steady when all of this is happening around you? How, because there's such chaos, like you talked about with the social media and media in general and people and the economy and the war and everything else that might be happening around us. How do you remain sort of perceptually coherent through all of that?
You have the 60-second coherence reset. That's basically goes right to the heart of this. And then the quote that you included from his sentiency and sensitivity. Good. Okay. I actually did it. I'm done. Okay. Anyway, what must be activated is not something absent, but something obscured, as we're talking about with social media and news and all the stuff that we're overwhelmed by. When the factors that interfere with natural functioning are understood and set aside, the system organizes itself. So it's like a self-regulating system. And what I like about this from there is that you realize that muscles, hormones, autonomic regulation, the nervous system, everything is being reset as you're watching. I mean, this is where you get into the details of, okay, this is what you're aware of. This is what you're sensing. And this is where it's going in your body. Woohoo or not.
Like, what is it releasing? It's releasing something inside your body that's captivating. I think that's a very interesting word, captivate, like a captive, you become a captive to it. And so how not to be captivated by something seemed like a really interesting idea to me. So like, how can you make something usable rather than it being very destabilizing to you? Was sort of my concept of it. And then there's book three, which is what you said, you had a sort of interesting experience, right, with book three. And book three is then where it shifts to like the very heavy stuff. And the book three is called The Landscape of Meaning. And it's really about how we interpret meaning. And again, it's for each person. So it's an exploration of your own meaning making. symbols being the predominant one. And I really took that from Ingo has some diagrams in his archives at the University of West Georgia where he really kind of looked at symbolic meaning. And of course he did in the late 80s, early 90s, a lot of what he called waking dream. We probably call it lucid dream work. Really kind of trying to understand symbols. And so that is the whole premise of book three, right? So he's saying we don't experience reality through a neutral system. What we perceive is moving through memory, emotion, attention, habit, culture, right? Expectations. So this book is about exploring that sort of symbolic literacy, what are our internal maps of meaning and the differences between what is a single, the signal, like the actual thing that you're perceiving and your interpretation of it. So it's like, what am I sensing, but how does what I'm sensing become meaning? And I think you had that interesting experience.
You want to go ahead and do that now? We've got book four and five. Or you want to, I don't want to interrupt.
No, go, because I think it's very important.
Okay. The thing is, I never plan these things. This just happens. We were playing dominoes Memorial Day weekend, my husband and I sitting at the table, and I all of a sudden have this ocular migraine issue. And this is something that's not, it's not a health problem. It's just an anomaly. And what it means is I am seeing a half-shaped disc of something that is a geometric, beautiful geometric pattern. And it's a half and like an arc. And I love the colors. They're very dynamic. And so it's happening. I'll just sit it out and wait, hopefully win the game of Donmos. Anyway, then from there, I see over on the door frame, a circle. The circle mimics this same color scheme. And I'm like, wow, okay. The thing is, the ocular migraine is inside, so it stays with you. When you move your head, that shape goes with you. It doesn't go away. This circle stayed right there. So I know this isn't part of my ocular migraine. This is something different. So my husband says, where is it? He goes over to where I pointed at the door and puts his hand in the center of this circle. And his hand is vibrating. And the circle then moves. So I realize it's an entity. It's something different. And so at that point, I'm aware. And we've had paranormal activity in the kitchen off and on. The dog has seen that kind of stuff. And so it's not anything I'm worried about. I'm just curious. Okay, this is unique. As I'm trying to write it down the next day or two, and I'm trying to find the words to form it, I'm thinking, and I get this vision that up about 2 or 3 inches away from my forehead, I see something that is a circle, like a lace doily. It's a snowflake. I get the snowflake image, and it's there for a brief moment. I'm like, whoa, what was that? Because I know it was something that was, again, something I'm seeing that isn't internalized. So there's that image, and then I have a sense of, okay, I'm trying to explain this. It isn't really coming, but whatever it is, why is it a snowflake? I'm directed overnight to read the third chapter in book three of Ingo's book. This is the kind of stuff I get. Okay, you need to read this. Of course, I wake up and I'll go look at it. This is what is so fascinating. 14, Symbolic Cognition, 66 page. And what it is, it's information often arrives in familiar ways. The sense, the emotion, the visual. And it isn't necessarily meant to be a literal translation. It's something that you're going to have to figure out. At the time I see that, I'm saying, well, why is it a snowflake? And then I hear from my nightlight companion that I've been dealing with for 28 years, it's me. And the thing is, it's always told me it was non-corporeal. Always told me that it had no way of making itself visible to me. And we didn't know until this happened that I could actually find a way to see it. And that's what it said, that and it's always been a bioelectric response kind of thing. And then this time it said it's a bioelectric signature. Because finally we have the words, finally I have the context, the meaning, the experience over decades of engaging with this entity. It only is there when I am interested. It doesn't pursue me or engage, but obviously it was in my space. Okay. It just wasn't aware that it was. And the other thing that it said when I talked to it, I was astounded because, oh my gosh, I'm able to see it. And it gave me that snowflake image. And so I knew that, okay, that's the image it wanted to present rather than the other that it used with the, and it did recommend against me in advising anybody to have an ocular migraine to help this happen. It said that's not a good idea. So there you go. I'm giving you the disclaimer. Do not do this. This is just what happened. And it was convenient because it gave me a way of bringing into context. And not only that, a next dimension with this engagement I have with this other being, other intelligence, non-human intelligence. And it's just fascinating that I got the information from Ingo's book. Okay, look at that, the third book. And I thought, yeah, that's the information dense book. What's in it?
Yeah, what's in it? Yeah. Because symbols are, if you think about it, like the hieroglyphics, mm-hmm. Egypt, emojis today, right? We're already, the past was speaking in or communicating in some sort of symbolic way. We know. Communicate in symbolic ways with emojis, but each person has their own symbolic language, which is this book is about learning what your symbolic language is. When you're perceiving information, it might come in a symbolic form, not necessarily to contact entities. The purpose of this series. The series is to become more aware of information and how information comes to you and learning your own language about it so that you can then begin to understand it, right? So yeah. This is like before you even start to interpret it, you have to understand the language, right? You have to understand the alphabet before you can put meaning to it.
I knew it was information. I knew this mm-hmm. was trying to give me some kind of work that I could research, find out,
yes.
The meaning, yes. And why it chose that particular representation. And there's more to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody would just call it an orb. I saw an orb. But I know I'm beyond, I've done that. You know, it's like, okay, there's more to it. And I've always pictured that entity as an orb because it comes through a round agate light, or it comes through another that's a neon little light. And there, it's light. That's how it relates. It's energy, and it gives that glow. So, but this with learning your own symbols, it has to do with what you are, if you're drawn to, like the Eye of Horus. I mean, I see people pick up these signatures or the Kokopelli. I love Kokopellis. There are other, or if you're going into the animal forms where you get the raven, you get these shapes, you get these signals, and they relate to you on a different level that you don't have to have a word for. And so when you start mm-hmm. realizing, oh, this form, this circle, square, diamond, hexagon, these are all full of information and context. It's just, how do I perceive them?
And then how to separate what you may have attributed a positive or negative emotion to it, instead of just simply the meaning of the symbol, right? Instead of, a dark cloud can mean, oh my gosh, somebody's going to die. mm-hmm. Right? That's not the meaning at all. It could be for somebody else, but maybe not for you. And so learning your own language is important. And so it is a very, very, very dense book.
Yes.
I will have to say that's a very dense book. But I think probably if Ingo were to speak to me today, he would probably say that is probably the most important of the five books, I think, because it is about mapping your literacy.
And when we're saying information dense, it means full of content. Rich mm-hmm. content. So you're not going to mm-hmm. just buzz through it. The others, you can do the overview and you can do the highlights and you can do the headlines and you can look at some of that. But this is beyond the headline. And there's some practices you're going to get into and write in, okay, this is what this means and this is what I might appreciate and this was, you know, this doesn't work. I'm going to skip onto that. But this one has so much information that it has more to do with, these are all, after you've gotten through the first introduction, okay, I'm sensing this and I'm picking up on that and I can see other people in my space and this one's connecting. Once you're getting these threads out to your environment, whether it's the weather, whether it's your body telling you something or the people in your surroundings, you're beginning to develop that landscape where you are aware mm-hmm. of things beyond your physical form. That's what you've done in the first two segments. And you get to the third where you're engaging beyond your body, possibly your remote viewing or whatever else comes with that, telepathically reaching out and saying, okay, what's here? And knowing what's there before you open the door. That's what that kind of information comes through, at least to me, from the third book, is that you're beyond the body, beyond the form, into the, what else is in the room.
Right. And what does it mean? Because Zingo is very careful in the remote viewing protocol. You would call it an AOL, right? Analytical overlay. Attempting to put meaning first. Don't put meaning first. Just allow the symbol to come and then build your own alphabet from that.
Yeah.
So all of the chapters are on this sort of development of this perceptual ability, your own sort of like perceptual language. It's not till the very end of that book that then is it about like how you ascribe meaning to what you have then.
Yeah, it just sitting with it. And I think yes. That's where this challenge of patience of it doesn't have to happen overnight. As a matter of fact, like when I had that information to check out chapter 3 or the third book, it was overnight. Yeah. I got it. I've been looking at the other books and going through the process. And my husband got me these wonderful little, they're the long, thin strips that take the place of having to, you know, do your magic marker highlight. Okay. I'm like, oh these great. Are cool. So, yeah. So I've got a whole, I've got some books full of all these important pages that I can just, oh, look, yeah, I didn't destroy the book. details. But
it's very detailed.
Yeah. But anyway, there's so much in terms of learning how to do it that you cannot do immediately. That once you make that connection of this made sense, and then you dream it into part of who you are, part of your framework, you take it back out and practice it, and it's already there. It's organic. It's become a piece of you, but it has to take time to, cook. You know, that's just it. Mm-hmm. You have to bring it into you and let it do its magic. And this is, I think that's why you needed 5 books. All right.
Yeah. Yes. And so then you get to book 4, right, which is above the noise, which is my play on, Ingo's signal and noise, right? There's the signal, the information, mm-hmm. and then there's the noise. How you interpret it, society's interpretation, the broader implications of that information. So I wanted to say now you are perceiving everything. How do I live with what I perceive in everyday life? Conversations, relationships, decisions, uncertainty, things that are changing around you. So how to remain kind of stable, oriented, while all of this awareness is unfolding around you. But most importantly, how to be discerning in the information and how to let things not always invade you. So to be selectively permeable mm-hmm. and how to be grounded. Because especially with social media, if you think about it, you're scrolling, you're already, the act of scrolling is putting you into some sort of trance, right? Things are just scrolling by you. And so it's very easy for information to just pervade you without having a sense of, maybe I shouldn't be absorbing all of this. And I think in the book, there are lots of exercises early on to do that. But book 4 is really, I am the James Webb telescope compared to the Hubble telescope, right? I am now, I'm so much aware of so much more, right? Mm-hmm. Hubble spectrum is very limited. James Webb is much more expansive in terms of frequencies and light. So it's able to pick up on a lot more. I'm picking up on a lot more. Ooh, how do I live with this? That was the goal of book 4.
This is the integrated navigation. Okay. Navigating perceptual contexts. And so it's basically introduced you to the concept of knowing your body's internal state, the perceptual mm-hmm. space between people, atmosphere of rooms mm-hmm. and places, emotional frequency and tone, symbolic impressions, pattern information beneath immediate awareness, and timeline signals as it begin to register. So you've built that. And so it's saying this is your map that you've mapped out at this point. These are the things that you have now built into place, and you should be comfortable with them as you continue. And then it gets into the context you're moving through daily. So I'm not going to go into all of that, but just to give you a frame of reference for this is what this content brings into clarity, that these are the things that you are now hopefully aware of and making sense of that as it's interfacing with you, or you are interfacing with it. I love the word interface. That's a new word that's, mm-hmm. all of a sudden come out, probably from ChatGPT or wherever, but it makes so much sense. It's like, the computer, it knows what we're doing better than we do.
Interfacing.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
And really, I expected to end at this point.
Really?
The series.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because it was really like the inner, it was sort of like Ingo's Secrets of Power. Like one is like very external and the other is very internal, right? High view, low view, outward versus inward. Mm. And then I thought, what? All of this transpires inside different realities. So Ingo is like, we're fighting so hard to exist in a reality we think is the only reality, which is sort of the premise of his Reality Boxes book. And I really wanted to pay homage to that book, which is how we got to book 5, The Gravity of Reality, right? Perception at its limits, right? So, okay, so now you have this collective landscape that's shaping perception. So what we're aware of is not unfolding in isolation, right? We have cultures, institutions, identities, social norms, information systems, collective assumptions about what's reasonable. And I love that, like what's sensible, right?
Yeah.
Right. What we should believe, what we are taught is safe to believe. And so perception is functioning under all those constraints. So what is permissible? What is plausible? What is identifiable? What is normalcy shapes what is allowed to be sensed or for us to be aware of. And so I wanted to then go, oh, I think this is probably one of the most important books that needs to address perception, because there's all the work you can do with you, but if you're not aware of these bigger things happening around you, then none of it will unfold in a way that you can realistically navigate reality.
It says it's okay to be who you are.
Yeah.
You have to become aware of who am I and why am I only doing this part of me when the other part of me really is what my heart says. And that's complicated. And until you are comfortable with that, the rest of this is really hard to get to, because in some way you have put that real you in a box. So there's a reality box thing there. But the society says this, my family says this, my workplace says this, and I've compartmentalized myself to become something that doesn't resemble the real me at all. And a lot of people have trouble with that, because then when they discover the real me, then some of the other things are no longer given the same priority, and relationships and all sorts of things can turn differently because of that awareness. But this is where it comes home to say, what is real? What is important? What is valid and valuable? And how do I put it all together so it works for me? To me, that's what it said, is that you have to be aware. Oh, and then you also get into the planets, which I like.
Yes.
The environment, the energy of the space.
Yes.
This is huge.
Yes.
It's huge. And it's so undervalued.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, I can't conclude it without doing, I can't not talk about geomagnetic and solar and planetary forces, because people see it all the time. Solar flares. We talk about geomagnetic things happening. We talk about the full moon effect, right?
Yeah.
All of these things have some sort of force on us in some sort of capacity, or otherwise people wouldn't be talking about them. You know, like, oh, do emergency room visits go up during certain time periods? I mean, Ingo is very fascinated by that and looked into that. And I was like, oh, I need to talk about that too, because there's something even broader than just like societal forces or norms or what have you impinging on us. But I think there are even greater things impinging on our sense of perception too.
Well,
yeah, we might not be aware of. Yeah.
Working in retail and working on the full moon, it's like, okay, it's a full moon. All right. Yeah. So then you would be prepared for things to just be different and more unpredictable and more volatile.
Yeah.
It's full moon. It's full moon. Everybody's out. You know, it's like the wolf pack just got released.
Right. And not done in a way like, it's not like an advocating of astrology or any kind of like, energy work. It's simply just to become aware of and notice these things around you, right? And so when I put it all together, it's sort of like, for me, it was like, what would it mean to learn how to notice, to stabilize, to understand and navigate, and then remain coherent within all of these realities that are shaping it, which really the whole purpose of the series.
Okay, I want to know, when you dealt with solar flares, because that was what I had opened when you said, what do we notice? What's different? Why is that unique?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look at that chapter, right, it's not saying that you have to study astrology. It's look at what you're experiencing during these time periods, right? Like, what's happening around you? That's what the explorations are about.
I know that the moon cycles are important, just in terms of when things happen, I will notice, like, I have better ideas during a certain time than in others. I'm overactive and I just kind of need to step back and can't sleep all the way through the night during a full moon. Like, oh yeah, it's a full moon. I'm awake. Must be, you know, there it is.
Yeah, right. I have more energy. I mean, I even think animals behave differently.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Something's happening within their system too. So it's not about like plugging into mystical things. It's just becoming aware of what's happening around you. And you always said, like, we've changed the definition of aware. We've lost that, like, to be vigilant, to be wary, to be extremely observant of what's happening around us. And I think if, even if it's just your attention, you know, like, I spend a lot of time on the word attention, right? Like, you know, attention is a resource. We give people attention, we steal attention, we divide attention, we pay attention, we weigh how much attention should be. It has some sort of gravity to it, which is very fascinating. So that was like the whole thing, is attention, awareness, and perception.
Okay, you go through the entire book with each book, and at the end, you'll do an overview of where have we, basically a summary. This was the opening, and this is where we ended up, and this is how we go to the next, we progress to the next segment. Well, okay, so basically, what I like is, this is after traveling through the five books, you've traveled through the full arc, awakening perception, stabilizing it, expanding it into a unified system, and at the beginning, nothing was missing, but your senses were already functioning beneath thought, beneath habit, beneath the noise. What was missing was recognition. So everything was already there. And you're just basically unwrapping the package and saying, okay, what's it all about? What have I overlooked? What have I missed? And you've come full circle. And my guess is that there's more to this than just the books. Are you going to do any seminars or anything like that?
You know, no. I felt like this should be each person's own exploration of themselves. And Ingo always cautioned about secondhand experience, because if somebody's talking about it, you're going to get my perspective on it. Ingo is always saying firsthand experience. It's something you have to sit down, which is why I gave so much space in the books to, like, what you're noticing or observations, or is this resonating with you? That even the questions are very open-ended. Like, what the question is for you specifically to answer, not somebody to answer for you. So didn't want anybody to have that kind of feeling that when you're in a group, am I answering it correctly or not correctly? Right? There's all those, that famous psychology study where there's only one person who's not in on it, but they show a picture and it's some, I don't know, let's say it was it's really a picture of a carrot, but it's, everybody's answering like it's a picture of a house. And it gets to the one person, and they can clearly see it's a carrot, but because everybody has said it's a house, they say a house too. And that is just something that happens, that we want to fit in with what everybody else is doing. And I didn't want that to be the case with this series. It can't be something that's taught in groups, because there's that risk of what I'm trying to put on you. And even Ingo would say, because you're the master astrologer, and of course he did my chart, Maybe not to know this. Yeah. You know, like you didn't get into 357 unless you gave all the your birthdays and the time and whatever. And he did your chart first. So once you were like you were astrologically approved, you could go and meet him. But he said he would never give astrology readings because he didn't want what he said to be taken and then manifested by
them. Yeah. That's how it works. I mean, you give somebody something and you project your stuff on them and all of a sudden they manifest it. And it's like, wait, why did you do that? That was just my perspective. That wasn't you. That's how I projected that on you.
Yeah.
And you took it on.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's part of my reasoning behind why I wouldn't do seminars or teaching, because there's the risk of giving something out as an idea and then being absorbed when it's really not, or people taking the easy road, or for society, you know, because they're in a group and things aren't coming to them in the way that maybe it is coming to other people. I don't want anybody to feel less than or more than anyone else. So it's really an individual study of one's own system is how I envisioned it.
When each of us determines what works for us, we don't all end up, what was the quote? If everybody's thinking like me, then you're not thinking.
Yeah.
If we all agree, yeah, then someone isn't thinking, and it's you. In order to grow, you have to have different methods of achieving maybe the same result or a better result. And the only way you mm-hmm. do that is to allow each individual to manifest their own way of being. And then you can, I think, progress to a higher level because you have different ways. Yeah. Everybody's the way they think. I don't always see things the same way with clarity. If I need the color orange, I like it, and somebody hates that orange. You know, it's just we have to recognize that individuals are unique, and the pattern for success may not be the same thing that everybody's been advising for the last 20 to 50 years. Obviously, it isn't. It's unique, and the only way we discover that is to allow that to flourish and to recognize it and celebrate it. And this is a program that I think anybody could do very easily, because in the first book, you get the introduction. When you said, one of the remote viewers said, it took forever to get to the actual process. Okay, it isn't that. That's really good. You took a hint and you said, okay, now go into the room and see if people pick up on you thinking about them. If you're staring at them, like, that's rude. Okay, but anyway, but if they pick up on it. And then the non-touch handshake. I'm shaking hands with you. Oh, no, you're not.
Right.
So the clue is
like, when do you notice somebody's in your space? I mean, you can actually just observe people. You can see people. When somebody steps closer, they back off, or they get closer to somebody. Mm-hmm. They like that, or they dislike it. Who are you in that equation? I mean, knowing those things is very important. Do you step closer or do you step away? When do you feel that person enter your space, and becoming aware of that?
And protection. Ingo gets into that too. I mean, that part is mm-hmm. the psychic protection element of, you know, when you're talking about just kind of, you know, surfing spaces here, there's that mm-hmm. other element where people who are already telepathic, already are intuitive, they're going to call you on it. All right. This isn't just going to be you out there flirting around, and they're going to say, what do you want from me? Excuse me, or they're going to leave. But to put that in there, that there are people who are already very adept at knowing what their space is and having their boundaries. And when somebody's just, you know, out there flirting with, oh, can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you. Go, leave. Now. Yes.
Yeah. And interestingly, in psychic sexuality, Ingo talks about where he did the copper mirror experiments. And it was so heightened, his experiencing of energies and forces, that he actually had to turn, he says this in the book, he had to actually turn to a healer to help him turn that off.
Yeah, I remember that was very intense and it didn't change. Yeah.
So this is this series is to help you know what your limits are and to understand that. So you can be very protective of yourself in that capacity. Yeah. What you're aware of, what you're perceiving, where your attention's going, whose attention is on you, what things you're picking up around you that really have nothing to do with you, but you're collecting them anyway.
I also like the emotional intelligence that comes with this. When I'm feeling a certain thing, how is it affecting me? What part of my body is responding? I think mm-hmm. that's a healing aspect of this work, is that it, mm-hmm. once you become aware that when I'm engaging with this, then I feel this tightness in my chest. What is that about? You know, or my arm, I've got this leg ache or this arm ache, or, you know, what is this? Where's this coming from? And sometimes mm-hmm. it's just as simple as it's the wrong room.
Right.
Just get out of that
room. I love that. I love, like, you know, like the emotional weather of a room. Mm-hmm. That, I thought that was a really fun exercise. I was like, that's fun, because animals, I think, pick up on it.
I've seen it in animals.
Yeah, I've seen it in animals. Like, there's certain places they don't want to be in, or you watch them look around. I always think that's pretty fascinating.
Okay,
now enter a room. Yeah.
I will add that my dog, Gracie, she's not with us anymore, but Gracie, she was a part German Shepherd. We went to two spaces, and I know she's thinking afterwards, why do you always pick the haunted room? Because she would have to stay there. One was the Sagebrush Inn. I'm thinking, I don't remember why we were there, but she had to stay overnight. The TV came on, and other things happened, and we came back to the room, and she was under the sheets, under the bedspread, as much as she could be, up under the under layer of the bed, hiding from whatever was in the room and annoying her. And the TV was full blast. And that was where I woke up in the middle of the night, and I thought Andy's arm was, I thought he had his arm over me. But I realized the arm was really, really hairy, okay?
Oh, no.
That's not Andy's arm. And Andy said, what? What? He wasn't, no, it was. Okay, that was a. And then down in Galveston, we left her alone there, and same thing, she hid in the shower. She's like, okay, I've had it with traveling. You guys are like magnets for ghosting, you know. But that, and so that's another be aware of the room, you know, kind of things do happen. And, you know, if you want to go really fun rooms, try the Stanley Hotel. Okay, so they're very loud. I didn't take the dog, but yeah, they sing, by the way, at the Stanley Hotel. They're singing ghosts there. They're quite happy and quite entertaining. So, you know, if you ever want to stretch out and try a few different rooms just to see if you can feel the energy and it will fill back, you can try that. Yeah. Take the book with you. leave the book out and say, okay, tell me about the room. What do I need to know? These, you know, people, they discount some of these experiences that take you out of your current everyday linear reality and say, no, that didn't happen. With this whole sequence, it's like, no, there are things that happen, and I need to be able to bring context. What does it mean? Mm-hmm. Why did I experience that? How can I integrate it, relate it, and ground it in a way that I can use this to help me navigate my space, help me navigate my own world? And it's just, you know, it isn't that difficult. But learning how to do it, I think it helps to have somebody who lays out a groundwork. And this is what it does with five books. It sounds like, you know, that five. No, it's really easy to get into this. And I love the exercises in the first book because, yeah, you're not waiting and going, okay, I have to get to the fourth book before anything really happens. Mm-hmm. So you skip mm-hmm. to the fourth book and get past the real stuff in book three. Don't do that. Make it fun. It was really, you know, fun. I've got the official explanation and perceptual survival here with a green, no, I'm sorry. It's an orange sticky note. As discussed in chapter mm-hmm. 3, official awareness defines what is speakable. Plausibility defines what is explainable. The distinction matters. So this is, you know, if you have a certain kind of thing framed as it's scientific, oh, it's valid. It's metaphysical. No, it's not valid. I can't prove it. It didn't happen. That isn't the case. It's if it happened, then you have to figure out why and how and what does it mean to you? It's relevant. If it happened, you experienced it. Stop letting other people determine your reality.
Mm-hmm. 100%. 100%. And you can hear it in everyday language. I watched this show on missing. It was like sort of just a show of interviewing people of missing people. Mm-hmm. And I think I was 43 episodes in. Before someone didn't say, I felt something was wrong. I knew it in my gut. I had a bad feeling. They didn't know how to interpret it. Uh-huh. But they still said it, which is fascinating to me. And this was like family members, friends, police officers, investigators, a whole spectrum. Nobody was, you know, from episode to episode, nobody was connected to each other. It was just, you know, a new case. And inevitably, up until I think episode 43, somebody said something along those lines, which is so fascinating to me. And in fact, I was just in the bank one day and I heard like a manager tell a new person, well, just go with your gut. I thought that was pretty fascinating. And so we're already using these things. These things are already happening. Our body is already telling us we're perceiving these things. So yeah, it's just laying out a roadmap to figuring it out what it all means.
The timing of this, of our conversation, there was a headline today and the headline had to do with a tragedy of a married couple. The comment was, I don't like the fog, because as a pilot, he recognized that that was a problem. And they said, what he said was, I don't like the fog. We wouldn't fly under these conditions. However, he and his wife, along with the pilot, made the trip against his gut and they crashed. The wife survived. The thing is, there it was, front and center. I don't like the fog. And the pilot said, it's okay. I'll fly above the fog. We'll be good. But barely after they had left, they crashed. These are the cues we get that sometimes because of something else, and they were due for a honeymoon adventure somewhere. That's where they were flying to. And the family said that he was just a great, great human being. And so that their way was saying, well, obviously he finished what he needed to learn. But the thing was so impactful because right now we're talking about paying attention to that gut feeling, that inclination that something here doesn't add up.
Yeah.
Listening to it, allowing your reality to matter for you, no matter what anybody else, how they frame it, it's yours. It's important. And I think sometimes, you know, that angst about not meeting a certain schedule or a certain criteria then encourages people to disregard their own best interest. And that's what this book is saying. It's saying these things are valid. Pay attention. Learn to pick up on them. Learn to value them. Learn to respect your own knowing, because it's already there.
Yeah.
You were born with it.
Already there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ingo was really good, I think, at encouraging people to keep it grounded and to not jump to conclusions and to not overvalue something that they couldn't really put any kind of real world awareness to. Even though he did tell you to watch out for the gremlins at the streetlight at the corner. Okay. I'm kind of... And there's that opposite side. Yeah, the one who liked mess with the stoplights.
Yeah. Well, I think what he would say is be discerning, learn to be discerning. And there's no easy path. It is hard work. Mm-hmm. And it's hard work because we've been so programmed. So you build up all these years of this like wall and wall and wall. So you have to start to break it down. And so it's not easy. And our culture right now is just rewarding speed and mystery and excitement. And this is sort of like slow, hard prodding. It's not necessarily difficult. It just takes time and reflection. And that's not where we are as a culture these days. You know, we've kind of social media, life in general is just so fast. And I think that Ingo would say, you know, slow down. Watch the sunset. Look somebody in the eyes before you make a judgment about them. Take the small things that we've thrown away. And I think that was part of like when he wrote his Preserving the Psychic Child book was like, wow, here's an opportunity as parents. Before you build all those walls, before a child builds all the walls, you as parents have an ability to help the child so that all these societal things that now we have to work to try to tear down to get to our real direct perception and our actual awareness of things. So he was trying a number of angles, but he would say there's no magic pill. There's no magic bullet. There's no magic way. It's not mysterious. It is hard, but discerning is probably the most important thing that you can do.
When we talked about earlier, me seeing that thing along with the ocular migraine, I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't try to figure out, is it a ghost? Is it a disease? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what is this? I don't know what it is. So as I'm writing, trying to figure out what it is, then I have another experience, which then brings another overlay into that. And then, so that takes it to the next level. at another level, but I have to figure out what the experience is before I have any way of figuring out what it means and how it relates. And so it's that mm-hmm. willingness to step back from whatever the engagement is, whatever the anomaly, and say, okay, wait a minute, let me figure it out. And not be frightened by it. I was curious. It was like, oh, wow, okay, what is this? It's alive.
Right,
yeah, okay.
Right, you know, right.
When it
right,
moved, better. When Andy touched it and it moved, it was like, whoa, okay, it's a critter. There's something there. But so that's the thing right. of these things happen all the time in different ways for people.
Yes.
And it's so easy because, yeah. you know, when they've got people around, oh, it's your imagination. No, or it's bad. Mm-hmm. It's bad. Oh, you know, you need to move.
Yeah, or in the case of that pilot that you talked about, oh, it's okay. It'll all be okay. I'll just go above the fog. Right. Kind of pushing down the man's actual intuition about it.
Yeah.
Or some sort of foreknowing or some sort of experience related to it, some sort of awareness of it, instead of saying, hey, maybe we should not do that because I don't have a good feeling about this. And so listening to that instead of discounting it.
And we're going to wrap this part of the interview again. This is part one. This one focused on the series, the five books. And the next one is going to focus a little bit more on Ingo Swann and the website. The website, ingoswann.com. Check it out. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.